My girlfriend and I have like a thing where like our measurement for our success is like, can we afford business class? It's like, no, it's like, we're not successful yet. it's like a weird meter we have.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra. Namaste and welcome to Hamro Yatra. In today's episode, we chat with Adish Gurung, who you may know as part of Toosteru. With a degree in urban planning from New York and Amsterdam, Adish is currently back in Kathmandu. In this episode, we chat about his journey back home to Nepal and the decisions that led him there. We also explore the transition that comes with such a significant move and the different roles that he is involved in today. Enjoy! Hi Adish, welcome to Hamro Yatra. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Sankalpa. It's been so long. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Now, for those who don't know yourself, Adish, how would you introduce yourself?
I guess it depends on who's asking, right? I think some people know me as, you know, half of Toosteru, which is a name that my girlfriend and I created for ourselves for our content creation, which you've done, you know, in the last couple of years. Some will know me as an urban planner. Sort of like a city geek. And I also dabble in helping startups in Kathmandu. So I guess those are things that I do. Yeah, that's, I think, how most people would know me.
Thanks for that. Now, let's start with some icebreakers. If you could choose any superpower, what would it be?
Great question. I'm going to steal what my sister said, I think, when she was 16 years old at like a teenage pageant.
Like a Miss Teen pageant.
Yes, she was in fact Nepal's first Miss Teen. I don't know what year it was. So in her top five question, it was also the same question, like, what would you give something? Or It was like, what would you give someone something to the whole world? And her answer was, I would give everybody common sense. because if everybody had common sense, then we would really have no problems. So I really like that. So if I had superpower, I'd probably give everybody common sense. Yeah.
And it's funny because the term itself, common sense, you think would be pretty common. But when you're working in corporate worlds or just like meet people randomly, like you realize that it's not actually a common thing to have.
No, not at all. I guess like something that's common for one person or a group of people is not necessarily going to be common for someone else.
True.
So I know it's like a weird answer. But yeah, it's I guess everyone's context really differs, right?
Yeah. That's the first in Hamro Yatra as well. I don't think any guest has said that they would spread common sense as the superpower. So there you go. Now, if you could go back into any part of Nepal's historical period, where would you go back to?
Oh my God, this is, I was expecting questions on like, what's your favorite, you know, fruit or something. This is
like... I actually used to ask, what food would you have if you could have something for the rest of your life? And like, everyone would just keep saying dal bhat or momos. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to scrap that question and just stick with these two questions going now onwards.
Going back in Nepal's history, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Such a crazy thing. So when both of us were little, I mean, I think we were like seventh or eighth grade or something. I remember, because I do a lot of sports now and I was like interested in sports back then too. Nepal hosted its first like South Asian like games or something, SAF games.
Yeah.
And it was like a pretty big deal. There was a mascot and everything. And then they recruited a bunch of us kids to like be cheerleaders in the stadium for like the opening ceremony.
With the flag and stuff as well.
Yeah, flags, and they gave us like little kits and stuff. And I remember being at school and they were like recruiting all of us and giving us all these like perks. And I was like, this is so fascinating, free stuff. Like I had never experienced that before. And then the whole, you know, like ceremony happened and opening and everything is like quite a big scale for what, at least what Nepal is used to. So Yeah, I remember getting that sense as a child, being like, wow, this is like amazing. This is like the world coming to us. But of course, now I know it was quite small and regional, but still it was like a big deal for me back then. But, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'd like to start the podcast by delving into my guest's childhood, because I just think childhood is such a formidable time of one's life. Now, Adish, what was your childhood like and how were you as a child?
I had a pretty, I'd say a pretty different childhood, because my parents were separated ever since I was born. So I've never actually seen them live together, which I didn't realize it was so, different or would have such an impact on me when I was growing up. I just thought that was like normal for me, and, you know, other kids had their parents together and stuff. It's only as an adult that I reflect and think, oh, wow, I think it was challenging for all of us to have, like, you know, our parents be living separately. So my childhood, I think, because my parents were separated, my mom, you know, was a single mom. She was working hard. I lived with her mostly. So I didn't really see her. She was really busy. Like, she worked a lot because she had to. Yeah. And my dad also worked, and he was living on his own. So my sister and I, we basically kind of like, I wouldn't say raised ourselves, but we found ways to be okay being by ourselves. I mean, even, you know, it's not like we were hanging out all the time. She did her thing, I did my thing. But yeah, we got used to kind of like being by ourselves, you know, doing homework by ourselves, like putting our, you know, uniforms together and stuff like that. So my childhood is, I would say, quite independent from like a young age. Yeah.
How would you say that has shaped you now as an adult?
As an adult, I think I'm not so afraid of being alone or being independent, or decision making has become a bit, I think, easier. I see maybe with other people sometimes that they're, you know, quite used to their parents or other adults being quite involved in a lot of their decisions. So for me, I feel like whenever we have to make a major decision, it's always been up to me, right? Like, I picked what college I went to, which one I, you know, picked out of the group, living by myself and deciding what career I want, you know. So I've never really had involvement of my parents in like major life decisions. So I feel that whenever I come across something like that now, I just don't even think twice. I just like think that I need to make that decision. Yeah.
I guess it comes naturally for you now. Speaking of college, you did go to the new school in New York City to study urban studies?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
What made you choose this field? Because it's not something you would have heard back then. Like, everyone would have gone pre-med or the main conventional fields. But urban studies, like, what does that even mean? Like, how did you come across this field and why did you go for this field?
I guess this links back to your previous question of how that, how my childhood impacted my life, because urban studies was something I picked very independently. Mm-hmm. Nobody told me what it was or, guided me towards it. And it literally came out of living in Kathmandu and being stuck in traffic and like looking at what was going on, the chaos. I was like, this is like insane. Like, this can't be how a city functions. So I was like, I'm kind of curious how this is, supposed to be. So when I was looking up degrees, I like saw urban studies listed alongside everything else and just started looking into it. And I was like, I think this is kind of cool. I don't really know what urban studies is, but I think I want to do this. And that's pretty much how I ended up picking it, really.
That's quite fascinating, because I guess everyone in Kathmandu would have experienced the same things that you did, like sitting in traffic and whatnot. But I would say for majority of us, we would just be like, oh, this is life. Like, you don't really think about how can we make this better, or like think about what can I study to make this better. But you went like, what can I do to remedy this? So that's very fascinating.
Yeah, we're also thinking, is there any money in this, really? I think as a teenager, I didn't really care about that so much. I mean, I care more about that now. But I think it was just like a curiosity that I just explored. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you went to Amsterdam for your master's. How did that come about?
So similarly, I mean, I went to Amsterdam for an urban planning, urban and regional planning degree. And so this was after I had come back from New York after my bachelor's. I had lived here for a couple of years. I worked a little bit in construction, the construction sector. And so I think after a few years, I was like, I think I need to kind of refresh my skill set or expertise. Mm-hmm. I need to figure out what's going on in the world, you know? So that's when I decided to go get a master's. And Amsterdam is, you know, is like one of the central places for urban planners and urban planning. Okay. They have great bicycle infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their municipalities are very involved in city planning. They're, you know, quite forward thinking in a lot of senses. So, yeah, that's how I ended up picking it, just to kind of like nurture my or grow my skill set, really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you've been back in Nepal for quite a few years now. Was that always the end game? Like you'd go get your education from elsewhere, get that experience, and then come to Nepal and do something there? Or what was that process for you like?
I think I've like flip-flopped so many times on on this decision that, you know, every Nepali really faces and goes through. Yeah, I think when I was in New York doing my bachelor's, I had intended to come back, back to Nepal. I mean, I did look for jobs and stuff, which I didn't get after graduating. But back in my mind, I was still like, yeah, I want to go back and I want to, you know, do stuff in Nepal. And I still had that like kind of feeling. And I think that's something like my kind of parents had nurtured. Like they both worked in the development sector and things on topics like conservation, indigenous people, human rights, things like that. So I was always like, yeah, I want to go back and I want to work. So that was during my bachelor's. But when I went for my master's, I was like, I don't think I ever want to come back.
You got influenced by the European way of life.
Yeah, European way of life, or just like, you know, I mean, just trying something a little bit more international, I guess. I don't know. I was just like, I think I need to get a job here or do a PhD or something. So I explored like a bunch of things to do after I graduated. But unfortunately, you know, the global pandemic happened. It kind of derailed a lot of my plans. And so I was back here and I was like, well, I guess I have to be back here. There's no other choice. But then things kind of changed. Like I met my girlfriend, and you know, things, we got serious, and then I was like, I think, you know, I'm comfortable here now. Yeah.
Mm. I love how you plan for different things, but life has different plans for you as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you talk to people who went to grad school with me, nobody would have thought that I was going to get into content creation and like try to be an influencer or something. They'd be like, Adish, like really? He like never comes out. He stays in his apartment most of the time. So yeah, I think they would have never expected that. But you know, that's something that my partner really helped us do, and I really liked it. And so yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Love that. Now, again, we talked about this earlier, about urban planning being like this niche area. How is the urban planning scene in Nepal, in Kathmandu particularly? And how did you go about finding a job? What process did you have to follow for that?
Even though I've been here for several years working in this sector, I still don't fully understand the urban planning like scene of how decisions are fully made. I think a lot of it, because it's there's a lot of bureaucracy, and there's so many different departments within the government where these kinds of decisions are made, and several ministries that handle different sectors. Like there's this Department of Urban, I think they call it DUDBC, Department of Urban Buildings and Construction or something like that. And then there's like the National Planning Commission. And so the landscape, I think, has a lot of actors in it. And I kind of knew that before I got in, and I decided that I wasn't really going to mess around with the government sector so much. So I was kind of like exclusively looking at, you know, options in the private sector, whether it's like housing development or something else, maybe even the development sector, like NGOs and things like that, because they generally pay better. So I was looking at those options. And then I just kind of happened to come across this very unique company called Utopia, which was very had this very global brand presence. And they worked on urban startups, like urban tech startups. So when I read through their like sort of mission statement and their websites, it seemed like they're building startups, but with like a very urban connection. And so that was really intriguing to me. I had also, you know, several years ago tried to create my own startup, which failed like miserably in like 2016 or something. So I still had that like experience of being in that area, and that's how I kind of got into it.
Mm. So what does your role entail now?
So currently I'm the community lead at Utopia, which means that I do a lot of the external engagement, all the communications, marketing for our company. So on that front, it's a lot of like engagement. And then, you know, since it's also a startup and, you know, on its own, we have to do a lot of other things. So besides that, I'm also like sort of in the fundraising sector. So I work closely with our managing partner on looking for partnerships, sometimes grants, investors, things like that. So I do those kinds of things mainly.
Yeah. Having worked in startups, I've realized that your title doesn't really mean the job that you do. Like, you're a jack of all trades. Like, you've got to do so many other things because it's a small company. You say you're like operations manager, for example, but you're doing so many other marketing stuff at the end, finance stuff at the end as well. But like, I think that's just the way startups are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're a small team. We're like under 10 people. And you can imagine we're all doing like different things. And yeah, especially when we're writing proposals, it's like,
a combined effort.
combined effort. And we're sort of upselling our skills a lot. because the team is so, it's a tight-knit team, a small team.
Now, where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years? What does future for you look like in Kathmandu?
What does it look like? I've never been good at like making long-term plans.
Where are you heading?
Right now I think it's a lot of like whatever my girlfriend also wants to do. I think it's like, we make decisions now. I think, you know, we've been dating for about 3 years now, so in the next 5 years we're hoping our relationship will, you know, reaches some other levels. That's kind of what we're hoping on our relationship side. And, you know, for our content creation, we want to kind of grow a little bit more regionally and internationally. So we're hoping that can happen a lot more, like collaborations and deals outside of Nepal. So those are what we're looking for in the next 5 years. And and I guess like on the personal physical side, I'm just hoping my knees stay stronger, stay strong enough so I can still play basketball 5 years from now. So whatever I need to do to like prepare them, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
Would you both ever consider moving overseas back again?
Definitely. I think that's an honest conversation we've both had several times. You know, right now both our parents are here, you know, they're getting on, so we want to be around them. Her more than me. Actually, she's very close to her family and she looks after their like health stuff, medical things. So we don't imagine we'd be going anywhere anytime soon. But for the future, it's something we've definitely discussed. Like she's in hospitality and I'm working on startups, and we think about, and also she's working in tourism. So we definitely think about maybe creating something, you know, in tourism, a company or something like that, or tour operator where we work based out of somewhere else with Nepal as its like primary product. Something we've definitely discussed. I think it's just natural. Our economy isn't huge. It's really small. So we might, you know, you might hit a ceiling after a certain point. So just thinking about ways we can kind of add to that by being based somewhere else, either in South Asia, Southeast Asia, or in the US, something like that.
Sounds like a good plan. Now, having lived in America and Europe as well, is there anything you miss from overseas?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I don't drink.
Let's hear it.
I mean, how much time do you have? Like, I can keep going on. I don't drink now. I used to drink before. So when I was in Amsterdam, there was a lot of non-alcoholic options, like lots of non-alcoholic beer. And for whatever reason, like, I mean, beer drinkers will hate that stuff. Like, they think it's disgusting. But because I don't drink, non-alcoholic beer is like pretty nice for me. It still gives you that like drinking beer feeling. You still get the flavors in something. Yeah. So like, I think that's what it is.
So that something you don't get in Kathmandu?
No, I mean, you can get non-alcoholic like drinks, but I think it's like they're very sweet, like very sugary.
Oh, like mocktails and stuff.
Yeah, and like I think you'll get like ginger beer by the bottle or something. But like everything I've tried here has been super sweet. I'm always like checking the sugar on the back and I'm like, this is not what I want right now. So yeah, so I definitely miss that. And you know, the other stuff is like just maybe a lot of the events and activities kind of thing. Here, socially, you know, if you want to do anything, it's just going to a restaurant. And kind of that's about it, really. So I kind of miss having the options of doing a lot of like social activities. Like if you wanted to go to a kind of a ping pong bar or like, you know, yeah, there's like a lot of bars with different kind of like games
activities
and things.
Yeah,
I kind of miss having that kind of thing, or a lot of like good public spaces where people can hang out and you know, do stuff. So I miss those things a lot. I miss good public spaces. Yeah,
I remember when we were growing up in Kathmandu, like you wouldn't normally go sit in parks. Like it wasn't a thing you would do, like you would be frowned upon, right? And then when after I came here to Australia, I like people would just like sit in parks, would sit on the roads and like would have a good time. And I'd be like, what is happening? And then now I'm like a park person and like I love sitting in park. I enjoy public spaces, like you said. And then I can't imagine doing that in Kathmandu though.
Yeah. Yeah, for both of us, it's probably been such a weird, unique feeling of like people go sit in public and you just sit on the grass. Like,
exactly.
You're just eating here. What is wrong with you people? You know, because we were so used to like having your little like private garden and just like everything's at home and things like that. But yeah, Kathmandu now is really upping its public space game, actually. So there are loads of actually like really good sort of reconstructed parks where it's clean, people are hanging out doing their walks and stretches, and there's like outdoor gym classes happening and games and stuff. Yeah it's like they're not everywhere, but like there's one or two areas where it's they're like where the it's really really nice. So that's different.
I guess, did you have any problems or challenges when you came to Nepal and decided to stay there? Like any transition into, because you were so used to staying overseas and their way of life, right? Like the efficiency or just even availability of different things. How was it once you decided you're going to stay in Nepal as a permanent for the next, I don't know how many years, how was that transition for you?
I think there are two major things. One is like every time you have to deal with something bureaucratic with like your local government office, if you have to get, you know, your citizenship made, license made, whatever it is, right? We had elections, so we had to make our like election kind of cards. I got a passport made recently. Anytime it's like those kinds of inner like activities and like things you have to do, I feel so depressed after. I'm like, oh my God, this is such a mess. Like it's so tough to do it. It's so unclear what we're supposed to do. You always feel like you need like an agent helping you out. And like, I'm educated. I can read and write. And I'm like, oh, you know, this is difficult for me. I can't imagine for someone who's like, can't even do those things, how difficult it must be. And like, if they don't even live in the city and they have to travel to get something done, how frustrating that might feel. So those are things that are really kind of, I found really difficult after coming back. But the second thing actually weirdly is like a positive. I'd say, I think after being in Amsterdam, culturally, you know, Dutch people are very nice. They're very direct and not polite. They're very direct. They're very honest.
There's no hidden agenda.
Yeah. And, you know, I think in Nepal, the culture is more around like, people are, when they talk to you, they're, you know, they add, you know, it's very floral, right? Like you add stories, you add like embellishments, and sometimes you never get to the point and you're kind of like, you know, you're hoping that people understand you so that you don't have to say the difficult stuff out loud or something. So I found that like disconnect quite strong, especially in the Netherlands. So coming back, I liked settling back in that kind of conversational groove, and you can kind of just... not get away with a lot, but there's ways to talk, you know, and be, and how things work here. And I kind of like that. I think that was quite nice.
Now, having lived overseas as well, Adish, what does success mean to you now?
What does success mean to me now? I think maybe making sure my partner and I are very happy or satisfied. Yeah. You can't always be happy, I guess. It's like, you know, we're satisfied. Being comfortable enough so you don't have to stress about money a lot. Not necessarily be rich, but just like, you know, my girlfriend and I have like a thing, or like our measurement for our success is like, can we afford business class? It's like, no, it's like, we're not successful yet. That's how, it's like a weird meter we have. But yeah, so I think like being comfortable to a certain point. But yeah, and also for me, it's a little bit more on my health, like just making sure I'm healthy enough to do activities and, you know, do stuff. Like I love being in the outdoors and going trekking, things like that. So I don't necessarily want to give that up. So if I'm able to do those things, I'd say I've been pretty successful. Yeah.
Do you remember in school, there was a slogan that said health is wealth? And like, you'd have to remember that. And it just seems so stupid to me. I'm like, oh, health is wealth, whatever. But now that I'm an adult, like, I actually realize what that means. I'm like, health is wealth. Oh my God, health is wealth. I don't think anyone ever explained what that means, like health is wealth. It was just there. And but now, like going through your own like health problems and realizing how that impacts your life, especially when you have dependents as well, you're like, oh my God, health is wealth. Like, I have to take care of my health.
Yeah. Oh my God, absolutely. In the last couple of years, I've focused so much on my, like, you know, you do like a annual checkup or something, and you're so, I'm like so focused on these numbers. I'm like, I need to make sure everything is like right in the measurements and like, yeah, when we were children, like you never have to think about your worry about your knees or your back, right? Or like nothing
what
like
you
that.
Ate.
Yeah, you what know? You ate. And exactly. You just like do whatever you want. And now it's just like, you know, everything is so methodical. Like I need to make sure I'm like not eating this before I do this, and then I can like have this much hours of exercise or whatever. And it's yeah, I definitely think about my health a lot. And I think, yeah, that's probably like every millennial's, you know, struggle now. You know, like that's, they're getting to
the
age.
Did I have enough greens today? Did I take my fish oil?
Yeah, exactly. Fish oil. Yeah. Yeah. They just like can't ignore it. They've been putting it, you know, in the back, but now they're just like, I need to embrace this health side.
Yeah. This year for me is all about embracing, because the last 2 years, like being pregnant, having a child, like I've put myself in the back burner a lot, but now I'm like, you know what? That's okay. I can like do small things. So it's all about embracing.
Exactly. Right.
Now to finish this off, for those who are currently overseas and are thinking about taking that next move to maybe move back to Nepal, what would your advice be for them?
Great question. So I get this question a lot, because you probably also know this. There aren't actually a lot of young professional Nepalis that live in Nepal anymore, really. So many of my friends have, you know, after college or their master's moved abroad, you know, have sort of had frustrations here and have moved. And they're always that like feeling of like, oh, should I go back? Can I like do something? And they look for me for advice. And I'm just like, I don't really know what to tell you. But I do see a lot of people sort of taking the plunge quickly and being like, yeah, we moved here and like, you know, we're going to start this business and that's our plan. And I'm always like, hey, give yourself some time, give yourself a few months to kind of get acquainted, get a feel for the landscape. Like there's a way things work here that isn't comfortable. It's weird. There are frustrations going to happen. You know, Nepal's ranks pretty low on the ease of doing business index. This is something I come across work all the time. And you can really feel it. Like you can feel it in terms of the bureaucracy, the size of the market, those sorts of things. So yeah, my advice to people is just take your time, like give yourself some breathing space, like where you have a few months to explore before you take a giant leap where you feel like you have to make it here after a while, right? That's my main advice. I would just say give yourself some breathing space. Yeah.
And if there's anyone particularly interested in urban planning or that kind of space in Nepal, in Kathmandu, would you be open to any listeners reaching out to you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a pretty public profile on LinkedIn and my social media. So yeah, just reach out. You know, I'm happy to talk about cities and geek out a little bit. So yeah. Get in touch. Great.
And I can put them on the show notes as well.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today, Adish. It was lovely catching up and learning about your journey and getting that opportunity to share it with everyone else as well.
Thanks so much for this opportunity, Sankalpa. And, you know, best of luck. I hope to see you either here or there soon.
Sounds good to me.
As always, if you have enjoyed this episode, please follow and subscribe to Hamro Yatra on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever app you listen to your podcasts in. Leave us a 5-star review while you're at it. Share with your friends and family. Tag us at hamro.yatra on Instagram when you're listening to it. Your feedback and shares make my day, so please keep them coming.